Context Podcast is proudly sponsored by Delta Wines and Brick and Mortar, our everyday go-to with sustainability built in. Delta Wines are vibrant yet balanced, made to be enjoyed on special occasions. Brick and Mortar was founded in 2011 and has worked to create the European wine drinker's California wine. The wines are small lot, single vineyard sourced from Napa, Sonoma County, and Mendocino Ridge. In addition to tasting good, they also help you feel good with an eco-friendly packaging and environmental nonprofit donations with every purchase. Buy online at winesforchange.com. Also, use the code CONTACTS to support us and get a discount. The presentation is beautiful, the wines are great, and you'll be supporting saving the earth. What more do you need? Again, that's online at winesforchange.com. Discount code CONTACTS at checkout. Drink Element is a healthy alternative to sugary electrolyte drinks. Each grab-and-go stick pack replaces essential electrolytes with no sugar, no coloring, no artificial ingredients, or any other junk. Element is thrilled to be releasing a new limited-time flavor this November, Element Milk Chocolate. I drink Element every day to support my workouts and being on the court and in the classroom. As a member of our community, Element has a special offer for you. Claim your free Element sample pack. You only cover the cost of shipping. Get yours today at drinkelement, that's LMNT.com/contacts.
Elroy's Fine Foods, the Uncommon Market. A revival of the community market, promising you an uncommon shopping experience and the finest of groceries and prepared foods.
When Chloe and I first envisioned what Elroy's Fine Foods would become, we wanted to build a market that was focused on building community. A beautiful store that not only sells incredible foods, but also prioritizes environmental and social responsibility, and provides the community with a safe space to shop, eat, and hang out.
Elroy's Fine Foods is located in Monterey, California, offering the most delicious prepared foods, curated groceries, certified organic produce, a full-service bulk food section, fine cheeses, natural wines, local beers, and humanely raised meats and sustainably caught seafood. Elroy's Fine Foods, the Uncommon Market, 15 Soledad Drive, Monterey, California.
Hello, and welcome to Contacts, a podcast dedicated to bringing you practical ideas from coaches sharing what they have learned throughout their career. I want to open the door into my network of contacts whose innovative, reflective, and diverse coaching knowledge may offer ideas to enhance your experience. I'm your host, Justin Colando. Welcome back to Contacts. We are joined today by Reggie Anderson, who is the Assistant Director of Athletics at Young Harris University. Reg, thanks for being here today.
Thank you, Clamo. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to share with you, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to this, actually, as you are now transitioning into a new role and what that's like while we're in the moment during a very interesting time in our lives. So if you don't mind, and take as long as you feel you need to here to help us ground the audience, but talk about your background as a coach. How did you get into this whole deal? What's your track record? What was it like as a youngster coming up? And then how did we end up where we are now as the assistant AD?
You know how long ago that's been?
Yeah, I know. That's why I say maybe we get the Cliff's notes, but with a few details sprinkled in. I know we're talking about a long time.
Yeah, okay. We're talking prior to this year, I just finished 25-year career in coaching, 19 years as a high school coach and 6 years as a college coach. And in that stint, I've been a head coach in high school for, you know, a portion of that time, all of the college years have always been an assistant and everything. So during that time, I've been able to be part of a staff that won a Georgia High School state championship with the largest classification in the state. I've been on the College Conference Championship staff. Blessed to say that I've had a role with 50 players that secured college scholarships at Division I and Division II levels. Note, my most proudest accomplishment is 2 years as a head coach at Steinbrenner High School, where I won the County Team GPA Award, which we finished number one in out of 29 schools with an average 3.4 GPA of 15 players. And I also had been fortunate enough to coach three players that went on to play in the NBA. Throughout that time, you know, it's been a lot of things experienced, you know, good, bad, and indifferent. We done went the whole gamut of it. So I'm just less than fortunate right now to be at a point now that I'm in administration. And my phone's been ringing a lot now by a lot of coaches just want to bounce stuff off of me. And so I'm still connected to the coaching circle. You know, and like I said, I get my coaching vicariously through them. They're like, Coach, what'd you do about this? Coach, what'd you do about that? What's your thought about this? I think this is an opportunity and time frame in which, you know, able to not be in it anymore, but just to be able to give back and help them younger coaches coming along. So,
yeah, for sure. And I think that's what happens when we transition into the administrative chair. Mm-hmm. And what I'm curious about, as we look at your career and what you've given us to work with here, is that as a high school coach, 19 years as a high school, you say you're a head coach for a big portion of that, you won a state championship, and you've coached three NBA players. So what did you realize when you first took over as a head coach that you needed to get up to speed on very quickly, right? Because we all think we're prepared. We think we have, you know, what it takes, and then all of a sudden we get blindsided. And like Mike Tyson said, everybody's got a plan until you get punched in the mouth. What was that like? Are there any moments that stand out that you could offer for these coaches you're now leading that was like, here are the things that jumped out right away as a leader and as a head coach that you have to make sure are tightened up?
Right off the bat, what I would say would be organization and priority of things to do. I think sometimes sitting in an assistant chair, you take for granted, you know, okay, he just head coach and everything. But once you actually sit in that seat, and I'm not talking about on game night, I'm talking about sitting in that seat in the office, in the classroom, wherever you are, when you sit in that seat, you quickly understand that you got a lot of things that have to be done, you're responsible for, and you got to learn how to prioritize that thing real quickly and get organization and understanding all of the rules associated with your sport from top down. You got to know the rules, because if you don't know the rules, you won't be head coach for long. You got to know the rules. Then once you find out everything that has to be done, it's when you got to go out and get your real good staff. You can't just be picking up anybody. You got to be very intentional and selective about who you're bringing in and what they're coming in for. And along with that, then you got to just trust your delegation. You bring a guy in, you got to bring him in with a specific purpose. You got to hold him accountable today. That's what I brought you in here for. And you also got to have him, give him the freedom to do what he does, basically, as we always say, in the field. So those are the biggest things, getting that organization and structure. The main thing I found is all of my years leading up to before I became a head coach, I was always a skill development guy. You know, mm-hmm. I would always work with the post players, and that was, quote unquote, that was my thing. I was a skill development working with the bigs. But when I became a head coach, I quickly found out I don't have that kind of time. I just don't. That's what I love doing. But priority-wise, that's not going to keep me having my job, you know, just because I'm a skill development guy. I got a whole bunch of administration stuff that got to be done, has to be turned. Like we say, there's a lot of paperwork involved, and one person don't get one form, it's the end all be all. I quickly understood that, okay, one of my guys on my staff has got to be a skill development guy, and that's what he does, and turn him loose in the gym, and, so I would just say organization and structure are the biggest thing sitting in that seat does.
Yeah. And you know what? It's a very interesting. You brought that up. It's this idea of delegation, an idea of, all right, I've been an assistant. I had this task, and then I go 18 inches to the left or the right. Yeah. Now I have to manage that task I used to do. Plus, I now have a million other things. And the idea that you said is, okay, organization, staff, hire people to do specific things and then delegate. How do you get to the point where you're comfortable delegating? Because at the end of the day, most of us want to just do everything. And as you just mentioned, we realize, and I think it's a great example because I'm in that same situation now as the head coach and the athletic director. And now I have some guys on my staff that can pick up a lot of the basketball that allows me to then administrate and manage the team. Can you talk about a few specific bullet points that people don't realize come along with being the head coach that are these things that you and I know, like coaching basketball is like 15% of what we do. Yep. Like, what are the things that are the other 75, 85% that people aren't aware of that come with the job?
Roster eligibility forms. You have to make sure everybody's on your roster is eligible. Certain forms, and a lot of times it's duplication because you're like, I just filled this out for this organization, but now I got to have it for this organization over here. You got to make sure that, especially where I was, that kids actually live where they say they live, you know. Because if it comes up where they got an invalid address, of course, they're going to say the coach knew and they did it intentionally. And all that kind of cross-checking, making sure that is that. Okay, now you're going to have the booster club want your attention because they got all these grand ideas about what they want to do. Mm-hmm. And you got to get ready to meet with them because you got some stuff that you want to have done for them to pay for. So you got to go into that and negotiate with, hey, how are we going to get this done? You just taking over a program? What type of coach did you have before with the Booster Club? If he was adversarial with the Booster Club, you got to mend those relationships. Mm-hmm. You know? And how do you mend those relationships? You got to spend time. Can you come over here for the Booster Club meeting just to be a part of it? Yeah, just to be here. We don't need you to say anything right now. We just need you to be in attendance. And then you're like, okay, all right, got that over with. And oh, by the way, we got a back school party we're giving. Coach, you invited to this. You have to be there. You have to show up when you're like, I really could be in the gym working mm-hmm. with the team, working mm-hmm. with the guys. I got to go do this. You know. Then when you turn around on that, you got a principal and the AD. AD is like, how's everything coming with the team? Do you have any issues? How's everything with the parents? I got a call from this parent. You need to check with this parent and smooth that over and everything. And then the principal is glad to have you here. We expecting great things from you from the basketball perspective and everything. However, coach, you are a teacher in the classroom. So I'm expecting those lesson plans. I'm expecting you to do lesson plans and have your grades in just like any other teacher, you know, and you're like, got it. That's what a lot of times people don't realize. Even if it's PE, you know, if you have a class, then you have to make yourself available to every student that comes in your classroom because they don't care about whether you're a basketball coach or not. You my PE teacher, you know, and, you know, you're supposed to teach me PE.
Yeah, no, and I think that's the thing I was mentioning. It's like, okay, what is the list here? Okay, you got a schedule. You have to make sure you have equipment. You have to order new equipment. You have to figure out how to pay for equipment. You have to schedule officials, maybe security. You have to figure out how to fundraise. You have to do X. None of that has anything to do with the sport you particularly coach. And I think people get into these jobs and they don't realize this, and then they're overwhelmed. So going all the way back, what did you say? You need to hire staff that are complementary and can help you with a lot of these issues. So I love that answer. And from there, I want to pivot to, okay, same question, coach. You are now sliding not 18 inches to the right. You're not sliding back to being an assistant, right? Which you've done. You went head coach, assistant coach. Oh, by the way, now we're going to jump into admin. So you're walking down the hall and taking a whole different chair.
Yep.
What have been the most eye-opening pieces of your new job?
I would say the most eye-opening piece is the financial obligation or burden of running sports. As a coach, a lot of times you just take, for instance, on the obvious stuff. Hey, the refs got to get paid, this, that, and the other. But hey, you can become an administration. Then let's not even talk about now in this day and age, we got to do COVID testing. Well, guess what? Every test you do costs you some money, you know, and all of a sudden, okay, well, we're going to get money for that. So I think that was been the eye-opening, and the amount of money it takes to support a sport. A lot of times people wonder why people don't have, you know, 20, 30 sports and everything, because it takes money for sports to operate. Then when you get into Title IX, if I'm gonna offer that sport for a male, I gotta offer the same sport for a female. So you say, hey, okay, we're gonna have a chess team. Okay, you know, you better have that split for male and female, you know.
Let's go right there for just a sec. Title IX, which was developed to ensure equal opportunity and access. And what you just said is, okay, I've got my student body clamoring to add beach volleyball. And in order to do that as an administrator, now we have to look at the numbers and be like, okay, I have to have equal opportunity and representation in male and female athletics, not just there's six spots here and there's six spots here, we're good, but also, what is the percentage of gender diversity at your school? Because then it has to match up with that. And so I think people who wonder, sometimes they don't have access to that information. And so that's where a lot of these college programs have dropped football over the years, because it's like, how do you balance football with other opportunities? Not only that, how do you pay for football when
football has to pay for itself?
Correct.
And it's always a deficit. We always talk about football because it's always a 3 to 5 year deficit just to bring the program up. And then you're expecting that on after year five, that it will pay for itself and be self-supporting. And then when you get into year 7, 8, 9, you're hoping there's some overflow from football to help support other sports. But that's all related to the success you got on the football field. If you don't have success, then you say, hey, it's costing us too much money to have it. And that was the biggest thing, is like the financial repercussions of the least little thing. Like I said, when COVID come along, that's not on anybody's budget before it came up. It's like, who's gonna pay for this, you know? So.
So let's talk about that for just a second. We go into, here are all the unknowns that we didn't know about. And now we have to manage these. And now in an administrative role, you're not just managing a particular team, but you are now managing an entire program. Right. What have you learned watching these other coaches as they manage their programs that you would then take and say, hey, football coach, I just saw the basketball coach do this. It might be something you can implement. Are there any of those that you've noticed in your time as an administrator?
Yeah, there's been some stuff that I've noticed and everything. Like, I noticed some coaches do a phenomenal job. Now, like you said, looking at it from this side, looking in, because a lot of times, especially in college, the sports are all silos. Everybody's in their own bunker. If I'm basketball, my world is basketball at Young Harris College. Yeah, I know we got a baseball team. I might go over there to the baseball team, but I'm not really paying particular attention to what they're doing. Now, where I'm sitting at, I'm seeing behind the scenes stuff that you're like, you know what? This coach does a phenomenal job in creating culture. This coach does a phenomenal job in doing community service and everything. You're like, okay. And that's translating to the field. So I think that's been the biggest thing, that you notice the differences. But then you also start noticing those things that are positives, that are what I see as a direct correlation to the field. Like, our soccer team is very good. We're ranked number one in the country, but they have an unbelievable culture from JV all the way up. It's, hey, we do X, Y, Z. We don't miss a beat. We all on one accord, you know.
So let me ask this, Reg, because that's exactly what I wanted to get into. So as you have coached, as you have seen these things, what are the best things that you've seen that you can offer other people? So when you mentioned they have an unbelievable culture, what are some things that they do that other teams don't, that you would offer up to the general sports community and say, hey, look, like, this has helped create this elite culture. Here's what I would recommend to any coaches that they do at least at a bare minimum, 1, 2, 3. Like if you left Young right. Harris and you started a new deal, what would you take with you?
The team bonding. I mean, they're unbelievable. They do all kind of team activities. And it's not outside to be seen, but they have, and our baseball program is the same way. They have their own individual activities that gets these guys together, and it's almost as family. They do inter-squad scrimmages, and they mix up the teams every time, that type of thing where they compete. But we're changing teams now. You know, they go out there, sometimes you see them, they got teams based off of classification. Seniors against the juniors, you like, but it's always that team bonding. And because they'll do like throughout the week, they'll do what they call meal night, where they'll have it at somebody's, the coach will have the whole team over at the house. Hey, it's spaghetti night and everything. So consequently, which is on campus, when you go to dining hall, all the soccer players are sitting together. They all go eat at the same time, even though it's a wide range of time they can eat. They're all coming in to eat at the same time. They're going to take up a whole table, and they're going to leave. And you'd be like, oh, that's Young Harris soccer. And things about the practice schedule. The practice schedule is consistent. They practice the same time every day to the point that he even gets them to schedule their classes according to, hey, you got this practice time. Schedule your classes accordingly, and the whole day is filled. So,
you know. What about things that you've done that you've brought with you to from your high school career when you got hired here as an assistant? What did you bring with you that maybe instantly wasn't implemented or accepted, but over the course of the time that you were the 6-year assistant, was there anything that trickled in from your high school career?
I would say the one thing on the court was, especially with basketball, was I brought in an impact system that awards points for every stat sheet on a box score sheet. And it's a point system that is awarded like +2 or rebound. And it totals up everything. So basically when you're on the floor, everything that that box score sheet can count is either a plus or a minus. Either you're doing it or you're not. And then we have a board in our locker room that after every game, it goes up for everybody to see. So in my stat system, if I'm a player and I score 25 points and I'm like, hey, I got my 25, then his impact points is going to be 25 because he got 1 point for every point. Whereas player B has 12 points, 10 rebounds, 5 assists, 3, a couple of charges, a block. His impact points are now 40. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, the guy that's quote-unquote my leading scorer, he got 40 tonight. But I got you 25, coach. All of a sudden, it becomes competition where now the leading scorer, like, let me go in here and give me a couple of rebounds then, because mm-hmm. they start competing against each other, you know, because mm-hmm. player B is like, you might have got 25, but I got 40 impact points, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Coach is loving on me a whole lot more than he is you, buddy.
Yep, and that's the thing. We do something similar, and I'm assuming yours is weighted, right? It's like, hey, charges are worth 5 for us. So it's what is important to you as a program, and how do you weight that so it takes on a life of its own with your athletes, right? We just added this year for the first time of 20 years of doing this, we added hockey assists to our sheet because ultimately in how do you move the ball more? If you get rewarded for a hockey assist, then guess what? Now they start chasing those. So I think anybody who's listening can take the idea and apply it to their system of here's what we value and here's how we're going to weight the points to make that impact system and guys chase it. And so that's a thing that I've found huge. I love that example. Any other examples?
Yeah. And, you know, like I said, we put that up on the big board and everything. It's transparent. Everybody can see it. So that way that player sits up there with 6 impact points. It's like, coach ain't playing me because he don't like me. And everything, you know, another guy would be like, nah, coach ain't playing you because, bro, when he put you in the game, you only get 6, you're not doing anything. That's not playing you. So that helps that culture of accountability that says, you know, it's not something we're just picking out of the sky. They're like, hey, you want to play more? Get more impact points.
Yeah, so, for sure. And I think one more thing before we move on this is even as you flush it out and you post it on the wall. So we have a team chat and I post it each week. Here's the updated Medal of Honor. Mm-hmm. And our guy that went for 20, he is fourth on the Medal of Honor list because he's not getting rebounds. He's not getting charges. He's not diving for loose balls. And as you got your guy that may explode for 12, but he's 100 points ahead of everybody else because he's got 10 rebounds. He's got three dives. He's got two charges. And it's just like, that's winning basketball. That's how you do it. So how do you reward winning athletic plays? And I think that's a great takeaway. Thanks for sharing that one. Let me ask this, Coach. 25 years, 19 as a high school, 6 as a college assistant. I'm sure you were coaching other things on the side, but how would you say your approach to coaching and now your approach to administration, how would you say that has changed over your career trajectory, your approach?
I think the approach that I have is, one is the old symbol of time and maturity. The approach that I had getting into coaching was, hey, I'm just here to help out. Because I got into coaching basically like my last year in the military when I was playing in the military and just ended up getting into coaching by just going by helping a director that saw me and said, would you come by and see the kids and talk to them? And I just did that. And as they would say, that's when that coaching seed is planted and everything. But even then, it was never, when I initially got in coaching, I'm going to be this head coach sometime. Everything, I'm like, hey, I'm just helping out, you know, year one, I'm just helping out year two. And like you say, you look around, you're like, how many years you been helping out? Well, my first 10 years of coaching, I was at Norcross High here, you know, and we building the program and everything that I'm just helping out. And even to that point, I was like, I'm not really interested in trying to be head coach. That's not part of the plan. I'm just helping out. Whereas now, getting into administration, now it's one of those, okay, now I'm an assistant AD. Now I do want to be an AD. So now let me start doing those things to line me up to be an AD. Let me learn what it is about the AD versus when I was an assistant, I'm not really concerned about what it takes to be a head coach. So I didn't do a lot of the research. I didn't get into, like I said, I didn't do doing homework early because I had 2 years of college all the time of doing this. I'm like, I ain't going back to college because I'm not trying to be a head coach, this, that, and the other. Only to run into the experience that when I was at Clark Atlanta, I was the top assistant and we won the college conference championship. And when you win a championship, of course, other schools come calling. And my head coach, Dal Jacobs, got the job at Virginia State University, which is a bigger job and everything. And he said, you want to go with me to Virginia State, be my top assistant there? I'm with you, coach. Hey, I'm with you, you my dude. We get up to Virginia State and they're like, he can't be your top assistant because he don't have a college degree. We're a public university. That was fine with private college, but we're a public state university and every assistant has to have a college degree. Are you serious? And then at that time was when, who I love, still my mentor and everything, Dale Jacobs said, go get your degree. I don't care if you get in basket weaving, you know, just go get a degree. And when you get your degree, you got a spot on my staff. So the lesson from that was I never looked at the big picture of what I was stepping into. Had I known that back then, I don't went on and got the degree and everything early. And I went back and got my degree, but it was just, I didn't do my homework early then. Like now, like I said, I'm assistant AD. I want to be an AD. And starting this month, I already started my master's program because I know that's what it's going to take to be an AD. Having a box check. Do you have a master's check? You know?
Yeah.
So that's
And I think it's very interesting that you're saying, I didn't do my homework. So 10 years, I look up, I'm still helping. And it's like, I haven't really learned anything about being the head coach. I've been around, but I haven't been asking questions. I haven't been taking notes. I want to push back now that you're in administration and you've been a head coach. I personally feel, and I am very intentional about doing this, in training my guys to replace me. Like I rope them into everything because it's, I don't care if you're looking at this. If I drop dead tomorrow, I want to make sure somebody can pick up with no issues. And so it's, I'm hammering TB. Let's go. We got to get you in a master's program. My assistant AD, we got him his. It's like, I rope him. My office is right here. And it's like, hey, come here. I need your eyes on this. In a way in which How much of that are you now preaching to those that you mentor? Like, you're responsible for uplifting your staff.
And that's the biggest thing. That's the biggest thing, like you said, my own, because I always tell them, you don't know what the future holds. You may not have a desire for it, but what is the outcome? Like, we got guys that are working on their masters, and I'm like, you need to get that finished. Get that finished, because opportunities are going to come up. And a lot of times, the opportunities are based on what your credentials say. So that is a big thing. And I would, you know, just like to point out that after I was a head coach at Steinbrenner High School, when I went to work with my best friend, Cabral Huff, and everything brought me back to Georgia to work with him, I walked through the door. My outlook as an assistant is totally different after being a head coach. And he also recognized that that's why I brought you here. And he put it in a very, very eye-opening thing. He said, I brought you back here from Florida to be my assistant head coach. Not an assistant coach, an assistant head coach. Because you know what I got on my plate. I can't do it all. I need somebody that understands what that is. And what are you going to take off my plate? And that's when, hey, my strength in administration and everything like that. So I did a lot of the administrative work. And the stuff I didn't like doing when I was a head coach, attending those boost club meetings, all the meet and greets and all of that, and the politics and everything. I used to be like, Hub, you just go do the politics. I got you. That changed my outlook as an assistant, because now I know what that job entails. Like you said, you pulling them in, getting them eyes on what that job entails. So now I'm better able to be a true assistant to him, other than I'm just here working on skill development, because that's what I do. Oh, we're going to do skill development. Oh, by the way, we're going to do this. We're going to do that. What else can I take off your plate, coach? That's basketball related, because I know that's a whole bunch of other stuff. Like you say, 50%, all that other stuff. Hey, I can run this. And Huff is the first coach I've seen on a high school level that actually develops assistants to be head coach, and it's proof in the pudding. The staff I was on in Duluth, we had two young guys working with us, and that was his whole demeanor about, I'm gonna train you to be a head coach, to the fact that I've never seen this, and I was like, and I even asked him about it after that. Huff, if you're in charge of the offense or the defense, and it's a timeout, and it's a huddle that calls for offense or defense, he has the assistant that's in charge at the board. So you tell him.
Yep.
I'm like, and they on the board scribbling and everything. And I first, I'm like, what? He like, don't listen. You telling me what to tell them? You tell them. And I'm like, wow, that's the only way they're going to learn how to be in a game, in the fire. Mm-hmm. Okay, this is your timeout. I'm getting ready to call a timeout. I need a defensive change. Get ready, defensive coach. And that's what that's what I picked up. As in, you got to be training your assistants. Like you say, train your replacement. And that's a lot of times that has to come from up down, because that assistant sometimes brings out and say, I'm just here helping out. That's all I'm here to do, help out.
I think if people can parse through it or not, the idea that you just said, so Huff brings you in as the assistant head coach and almost like a mentor who's done the job. I did the same thing when I became the AD. I hired a guy that he's 30 years older than me, who's been an AD for years. And I was like, hey, can you come be my mentor? And for 4 years, I got to work under him, even though he was the assistant, where I got to learn about some of the political stuff that you're talking about that he loved. And I was just like, yeah, you do it. Right. But I was able to learn. So now when he left in the off season and I had to find a new staff member, it was like, okay, let's find a great person that brings something to the table that we don't have. And then we can reshuffle job description. Okay, you're strong at this. You're strong at this. And it may not look the same. And I think the other thing to point out that you said, in case people aren't listening, is that idea of control and allowing the people that you've hired to not only be great at their strength, but lead from that place. And so that's something that I've started to do over the last 4 or 5 years. If I don't call the timeout, the other team does. I don't even go into the huddle. Like, I'm like, the kids can handle it. The assistants can figure it out. But it's like, I didn't call that timeout. I got nothing to say to these guys. And then when we do, it's to your point, we'll meet quickly as a staff and it's, hey, you got them. Or if it's like, hey, I got to say something. And it's like, how long, actually better question, I know how long it takes. How do we help the all of the other coaches in our lives and those that are young and coming up to get to a place of confidence where they can cede some of that control? Because really that's what it's about. It's like, hey, I don't need to have to be the voice on everything.
Right. I think that, like I said, that is an example, but it started day one when you're in practice, you know, Huffton sometimes walked in and like I said, he brought me in to help mentor the young coaches we had who are now excellent head coaches being young. But sometimes he used to walk in and he used to be like, Reg, I'm just going to give Shroud the practice today. You do whatever you want with it. I'm just going to sit back and watch. And I'm like, oh, okay. Shroud don't know this. He walk in. Coach, what are we doing today? Whatever you want. And then he would sit back and say, okay. We go through practice. And then afterwards, we all sit in the room after that and give him an evaluation. So when it came time to be in the huddle, one, they were used to hearing him take over. They were used to him just being around and being in that space. So it wasn't foreign to him and everything, but it was by design. And I think that was the biggest thing. You have to be intentional about it from day one. These guys came in and said, hey, I want to be a head coach. And Huff is, you sure that's what you want? You sure that's what you want? He said, okay. And when they have issues on their team, they'd be like, JV be playing. He'd be like, Reg, go watch JV and evaluate coach. And afterward, we had a conversation. Hey, you switched from zone to man for what reason? You know, why? Right or wrong, what's your reasoning for it?
Right.
You know, like we thought we'd tell them, there's no right or wrong answer. It's just you have to have a logical reasoning for everything you do because that's what, you know, what's going to be looked at.
All right, let's pivot.
Yep.
And we're going to do a case study here because I would love your advice. And I think it'll probably help some other people that listen to this, because I think often as coaches, intentionally or unintentionally, and as players, we get sucked into resulting, meaning like, oh, okay, here's the outcome. And therefore it must have been a good or bad decision based on what the outcome was, rather than, as Andy Duke talks about it, is focus on the process of the decision and eliminate outcome from the evaluation. And so right now, we're in the middle of, and I don't like saying this, but it is what it is, an unprecedented time with COVID, whatever. So, for example, right now, we have league play, conference play starting next week. We started classes on Monday. We have not been in the gym this week as a team because our testing has been delayed. So I'm not comfortable going inside. I don't want to expose our kids, and we still don't know who's positive, negative, whatever. So. Right. How do you advise me, one, and anyone else that's listening that, hey, it's all good. Don't worry about it. You're going to play Tuesday, practice or not, roll the balls out. And hell, you might not even play Tuesday. But what? It's going to affect the league championship, the playoff. Like, I'm in a good place as an older guy that, quite frankly, doesn't care a whole lot about the outcome. But there's a lot of us that do. What's your advice to me in this situation? Hey, it's going to be okay. Here are all the things that you can do that are wins, even if it's not reflected on the scoreboard.
I think one of the things you can do is put on it the importance that it has. And the importance that it has it is one game. Win, lose, or draw. Wednesday morning is going to come. You're going to go to class. And life is going to go on. It's not the end of the world. The other thing is, like we always used to do, is you put it in perspective of what you did. You like, guys, we didn't have time to practice all of that and everything. That's all well and good. We know what we do. We know what systems we run and everything. So we're going to take this. This is like a glorified scrimmage. I know you haven't ran. I know you haven't ran. We're not really concerned about the school board and everything. Well, let's just see how much we do remember. Okay, by show of hands, who remembers this play at this play? Okay, that's the only plays I'm calling. That type of stuff where I'm not going to overload you. And one of those, you know, and guys, we treat this just like they always treat this like the YMCA running. We just showed up with our crew. You know, it's open run. We showed up with our crew. You didn't practice YMCA. So, you know.
Well, and that's what we're planning on doing. And quite frankly, I guess I'm running into is the variety of opinions, not from like my staff or even my school, But as I chair the league athletic director committee, it's like the different questions of how we're going to operate this season and not dismissing anybody's opinion. Right. It's like, I'm very much in the shrug the shoulders. Like, hey, just roll the balls out. It's exactly that. Like a year ago, we didn't play at all. And we were all talking about how happy we would be if we got to play one game. And then all of a sudden you play one game and it's now we're talking about championships. It's like, who cares? Like, right. It hasn't changed just because we have a week schedule. But so it's like, how do we hit the reset button as a community and remind ourselves, hey, we're playing again. Let's focus on that and detach from outcome. And if we roll in with 7 guys out of 10, like, great, it's all good.
I think the biggest thing was, I give you a primary example, is Clayton State women's basketball team just played Young Harris, played us last Wednesday. They were hit by COVID and only had 5 players. They show up with 5 players, and it took us to overtime to beat them, by the way, with only 5 players. Because they are pretty good.
Yep.
But it was like the whole demeanor of the coach of Clayton State was, we at least get to play this game, and at least I don't have to worry about substitution.
Right.
It was like breaking it down to the barest form. Hey, I don't have to worry about people having my playing time tonight, and at least we're playing and everything. I think that's a huge one, getting everybody to reset, to understand that, you know, that we are playing. We are playing, and whether we have a championship or not, who really cares? The games are being played, and as long as the games are being played, then all of the aesthetics about what sports is continues to go, because only the record books will say, oh, in 2022, this was the champion of that, you know, everybody, you know, but those kids remember, hey, I played X amount of games, and guess what? I had fun. We played a game on a Tuesday. We didn't have practice.
Hey, I think it's funny. 2 things, and I'm going to ask you one last question. We, to the 5-player deal, we played a team in the playoffs 3 years ago. We rolled in, and we're like, oh, they got 6 dudes. We're good. And then they 20-pieced us. And it was like, hey, you never know. And then on this piece, here's a perfect example. So I'm coaching for you, and games just got canceled. And I come in, and I'm pulling my hair up. What would – and it's hard without a specific, Reg, but I'm going to tap into your administrative background here. What would you tell me that would help me shift my focus to look for what wins are possible, even when I'm not getting what I want? I don't get to play this game. But hey, if you change your perspective, here are the COVID wins you can find if you're willing to shift to look for X. What would be some of those things that you would point out to me and or any of the coaches in your department?
Wow. I think the COVID wins you get, even if you're not playing, the COVID wins you get from that is, once again, what we talked about, going back to your team bonding. Because now you got time to do stuff away from the court. And I hate to keep referring to him, but I think one of the classic ones was when Huff took over at Voorhees. In the midst of COVID, he couldn't meet with his guys. He couldn't practice with them and everything. But he did Zoom, and they talked through a whole lot. So I think, and from out of that, like we are now, I think COVID did, the best thing to come out of COVID was Zoom. So now, guys like me and you, we would have never met had it not been for Zoom. Then through Zoom, we really get to know each other, so that when I see Climo on the street, I know Climo because I know all about his mannerisms. I know his mentality and everything. That's my dude. And you're in California, I'm in Georgia. Hey, we would have never ran into each other had it not been for Zoom, you know?
Yep.
So I think what COVID did was make our coaching community become clear. So like you say, all coaches are having this conversation. What are the wins we can get out of it? What are you doing with your guys? What are you doing with your guys? How are you relaying what's going on to your guys? And I think that's the biggest part. What's the communication going to be? Because how you communicate them not playing or not having practice is how they're going to receive it. And kids are resilient. Players are resilient. If they look at coach ain't stressing about it, they're like, why are we stressing? Coach, hey, we going to play, coach? I don't know who we're going to play. If we're going to play Tuesday, we're going to play Tuesday, whether we practice or not. I'm just glad we playing, dude.
Yeah, no, I think that's
get out there, do, get out there, do your best, and we're going to live with it.
Yeah. I think that's a great answer. And that end wrap there, the perspective of how the coach comports themselves is how the players are going to respond. So if, like, I'm just getting texts while we're recording, coach, we're practicing today. And it's like, I don't know. We'll find out. Like, stay ready. And so I think the more we could offer as both administrators is, how as a coach do you model the behavior you want to see from your kids, both on the sideline and also when you're not even near the court? Like, how are you receiving bad news or no news or updates? And how are you responding versus reacting? Right. So I'm going to take that, wrap it up in a bow for you. And thanks for being on today, coach.
All right. Thank you, Justin. Appreciate you.
This podcast was also brought to you by teachhoops.com. As coaches, our inboxes get flooded with noise on how to make your program better. Teachhoops.com will get you focused on what needs to get done. One thing you've heard from these podcasts is no matter the experience, you got to keep pushing yourself to be better. Coach Steve Collins will help you direct that noise. He is there to help you. He has the credentials as a coach, and he's never turned down a Teach Hoops member. Sign up for a plan at teachhoops.com and mention us at checkout. This site is here simply to help you be better. Take advantage and see you on the court. Remember, go to teachhoops.com. Drink Element is a healthy alternative to sugary electrolyte drinks. Each grab-and-go stick pack replaces essential electrolytes with no sugar, no coloring, no artificial ingredients, or any other junk. Element is thrilled to be releasing a new limited-time flavor this November, Element Milk Chocolate. I drink Element every day to support my workouts and being on the court and in the classroom. As a member of our community, Element has a special offer for you. Claim your free Element sample pack. You only cover the cost of shipping. Get yours today at drinkelement.com/contents.